The globalists are the puppet masters, but who are the puppets?
For example, the trials with former President Trump. I mean, it's ridiculous what all they've charged this man with. Really, they're coming after him and his family. And the message they're sending is if a former U.S. president and billionaire cannot win against us, what makes you think that you feeble deplorables can defeat us? And that's really where we're at. They're making an example now out of certain leaders, especially Trump, because, you know, if they can do this to him, why fight anymore? Why take a stand? Why do anything? Because it's all over. That's what they want us to think.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, Radio for the Remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. Today, Jan talks with Gary Kaa about the rush to the One World system. Who is behind this effort, and what is their timeline? Can we as believers stop or slow down this evil system? Here is today's programming.
People often ask me to name names, to specify who some of the most committed globalists are. So here are a few. Along with Pope Francis, they include Klaus Schwab, director of the World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, George Soros, Yuval Noah Harari, who's an Israeli humanist who basically mocks God. Here in Canada, someone with the initials of JT. Most of the Biden administration, the Rockefeller Carnegie Ford Consortium of Foundations, various leaders of the United Nations, various leaders of the European Union, the Club of Rome, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and the Council on Foreign Relations, some of your central bankers, the bulk of our television, print, and social media magnates, much of our education establishment, certain institutional investment conglomerates such as BlackRock, numerous religious leaders, including some from the World Council of Churches, along with high Freemasonry, what I call Illuminized Freemasonry. This is not a complete list by any stretch, but these are just a few of the individuals and organizations who are networking in the pursuit of a one world order. Some people are uncomfortable with the word conspiracy, so if it better suits you, we can say that globalists are pursuing a common agenda, or that they are part of a joint endeavor, or involved in a collaborative effort. Take your pick. I don't care what you call it. It's happening.
Glad you can join me for the hour today, Understanding the Times Radio. And we have had a push for global government in the news in recent days and weeks. And when that happens, I like to talk to one who has chronicled this for decades here, and that would be Gary Kaa. I'll bring him on in just a minute or two. But we have had a United Nations annual meeting just a week, 10 days ago or so, and a subdivision of that, the United Nations Summit of the Future, and their creation of the UN Pact for the Future. All of that happening, and I think it would be good if you held on to that proposed idea of a UN Pact for the Future, and I'm going to talk about that for at least the opening part of today's programming. It's all about global government. That's what the bottom line is. Of course, that's outlined in the Bible. Now, have you heard much about this summit of the future? About 170 nations were on board. I'm going to play just a quick soundbite of Alex Newman talking about it. He's going to inform you that you don't know about it because not that many people are talking about this.
And I think one reason why there's so little coverage in the American media is at a very high level, they recognize, the Council on Foreign Relations has talked about this many times, Americans are just not on board with globalism. If Americans knew there was a summit of the future, contemplating a pact for the future that envisioned handing drastic new powers to the UN, to unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats, there would be outrage. People would never put up with this. They'd call their congressman and say, why are we still giving money to these creeps? Like, you know, why do we need to give money to an organization that's made up of a bunch of dictators, a bunch of people who represent dictators, to take more power and authority from us? We're trying to take power and authority back from the federal government. We don't want to give more to an international agency. And that's very typical. You go to these climate summits, very little presence from the American media. You know, sometimes the Washington Compost, the New York Times might have a correspondent there. but very, very little attention is paid to these things. And I think from the perspective of the media organizations, they say to themselves, well, Americans just don't care that much about what's going on at the UN. Well, they don't care that much because they don't know. If they knew, they would absolutely care and they would absolutely not tolerate it.
This hour is going to inform you and apprise you about it. I want to welcome back Gary Kah. I often talk to Gary when we're dealing with issues that concerns the one-worlders. Gary, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jan. It's always good to be with you.
Where on earth to start? And you said to me, and by the way, folks, I also want to talk about some election-related issues, because you, Gary, have been tracking Kamala Harris for a number of years here. But you said to me that they are so close, meaning the globalists are so close to obtaining their goals now that they have this pact for the future. Why don't you summarize just what is this pact for the future?
It's 42 pages long, 56 action points that are included in this pact. When the president of the General Assembly, Philemon Yang, put his gavel down, it signified a consensus of all 193 UN member nations going along with this. And they used something called the silence procedure, which if there wasn't a huge outcry at the event, simply it passes automatically. And the whole thing took less than 5 minutes, which is amazing for something this major and unprecedented. The Pact for the Future included two accompanying annexes, the Global Digital Compact and Declaration on Future Generations. The Global Digital Compact has to do with artificial intelligence, using it, I'd say manipulating it personally for the UN's world government purposes. That's a big part of all of this. This pact was in the process of being negotiated over about an 18-month period. Olaf Scholz of Germany, along with the president of Namibia, were the ones who were responsible for that. And on September 22nd is when this was put before the UN and was adopted. So just a few of the things that will impact the world as a result of this going through. And by the way, one of their slogans was, this has been repeated often, especially by Guterres, the UN Secretary General. He says, we can't create a future fit for our grandchildren with systems built for our grandparents, yeah. End quote. In other words, the UN system is out of date. They need more power. They need more ability to maneuver as they want to. All of this has to do with all-out global power for the UN. Now, a few of the areas, they want to turn the International Court of Justice into a type of global Supreme Court. So they want to give it much more power than it currently has. They want to begin an international tax. My guess is it would begin on airline travel, perhaps, and currency transactions, but they've talked about six or seven different kinds of taxes over the last couple of years, even a global income tax eventually. Somehow, if the UN is going to add a whole new layer of international government, it has to be paid for somehow. So we're looking at additional taxes one way or another. Also, they've expressed an unwavering commitment to international law that would override the laws of nations. This pact would limit our freedom of speech. They're very much into controlling information. Anyone speaking out against the UN would be labeled as someone who's putting out disinformation or misinformation or would be accused of hate speech. So that's a big part of this. And then also a complete all-out commitment to the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, which this is all being implemented in the name of the environment, and that would include some additional resolutions and power grabs.
Gary Codd, how does what the Pact for the Future then actually morph into the 2030 agenda? Are they one and the same?
It is setting the stage for the 2030 agenda, which will be much more detailed and specific. And they're going to say the sky is falling, the world's going to come to an end soon. Therefore, the UN needs more power to be able to save us from this impending environmental crisis.
Who is the declared leader of this Pact for the Future? We know who will ultimately be leading all this one world stuff, and that's not the topic here for the hour, but is there a declared leader of this pact?
Antonio Guterres definitely sits on top of this right now, and much of this was geared toward giving him more emergency powers in the event of an international declared emergency. Basically, it would give him dictatorial-like power, and one of the phrases that was used throughout this meeting and in the pact itself has to do with how the UN would deal with complex global shocks, which can mean just about anything. The list of potential crises, for example, that would allow the UN to seize more power than what it has had in the past, that could extend this type of emergency authority to the UN Secretary General, aren't just limited to a pandemic, although that's one of them, but it can include a major climate event, a global digital disruption, which I'm assuming by that they mean a cyber attack or an EMP strike, also a major event in outer space, among other unforeseen risks. So the sky is the limit, really, as to what could be construed as an emergency by the UN and then give these incredible powers to Antonio Guterres, who, by the way, when he was the president of Portugal, during part of that time, he was also the president of an organization called the Socialist International. That was the world's preeminent alliance, really, of socialist and communist political parties, and he was the leader of this. And this guy is in charge of the UN. He's the current UN Secretary General. And if that's not enough, Tedros Ghebreyesus, who's the Director General of the World Health Organization, which could play a big role in all of this, he's a former socialist revolutionary leader from Ethiopia who has had very close ties to China for decades. So these are the two main players over the UN and over the World Health Organization as a starting point. But most of your global leaders who feed into the UN support this. The Biden-Harris administration are completely in support of this pact for the future.
And I want to go there in just a second. Talking to Gary Carr, and we're opening the program talking about the UN Pact for the Future, which was a part of the UN Summit of the Future back on September 22nd, approximately. This is all a part of the annual United Nations meeting in New York. We have that every year, but some of this is new, the Summit of the Future, the Pact for the Future. Alex Newman writes about it, and Alex attended this event. He's going to give me a report here in 2-3 weeks. But he writes, according to the UN Secretary General Guterres, former leader of the world's preeminent alliance of socialist and communist political parties, the UN Summit of the Future represents, quote, an essential first step towards making global institutions more legitimate, effective, and fit for the world of today and tomorrow. And Alex goes on to say, the final agreement adopted at the Summit of the Future formalized those ideas with the backing of virtually, get this, folks, every national government and dictatorship on Earth. Only more globalism can handle the real and imagined problems facing humanity, according to the document. And then Alex Newman concludes, the term global governance, often used as a less ominous placeholder for global government, is mentioned repeatedly throughout the document, always as something positive to be advanced. Under the heading Transforming Global Governance, for instance, the pact calls for a dramatic expansion of these mechanisms for governing of all humanity. It does sound like it's leaping out of the Book of Revelation. Any further comment, Eureka?
Yes, this whole conference, the bottom line was they want to have emergency powers in the event of an international crisis, a future moment in time where they officially seize control and all the nations of the world have to do what they say. This UN emergency powers, when they're kicked into effect, they could be in effect as long as the UN deems necessary, in other words, indefinitely. So that's really what this is all about. It's a power grab. As a result of this pact for the future that was approved, the UN is now able to seize control over all of its member nations, including the U.S., in the event of an international emergency. And the only thing that could really stand in the way of that is if the U.S. moved to defund the United Nations and the World Health Organization and possibly completely withdrew from those organizations.
And I think Donald Trump is open to that. Am I right there?
He is. Biden and Harris are absolutely not open to it. In fact, they've been very actively involved in this. The meeting back in May with the World Health Organization, which was really the beginning of this move to grab more power for the UN, the Biden administration had been involved in actually crafting those documents. They proposed something like 13 of the amendments that were proposed. So they were working behind the scenes with the World Health Organization. So it's very unlikely that they would now suddenly oppose the WHO or the UN on what they are doing.
You said to me, quoting here, that the United Nations will need to be reinvigorated to meet planetary challenges. What did you mean by that, be reinvigorated?
I simply meant that for the crises that they are preparing for, they needed these emergency powers. They needed to get this pact through. Otherwise, they would not have the authority to really act. Every country would be able to remain as a sovereign nation and respond however they see fit to an international crisis. For example, if there's another pandemic or if there's World War III or whatever. But with this latest move, what the UN has done, they're saying we are now in control if there's an international emergency, and every member nation in the UN will have to abide by whatever we dictate.
I want to play one more quick clip here of Alex Newman weighing in on this pact for the future. And then, Gary, I want to transition into how does presidential candidate Kamala Harris play into all this?
As you go through the pact for the future, it's very clear that this is a power grab. In fact, they argue repeatedly that all of these are global problems and they can only be addressed through what they call multilateralism, which, as you pointed out, is just globalism. And they say so very explicitly in here. They say they recognize the supremacy of international law. They say that the United Nations needs to be at the center of global governance and multilateralism. And one of the themes that Antonio Guterres has been playing on for several days now, and there was even like placards on the floor and big stickers said, we can't solve the problems of our grandchildren using institutions that were built by our grandparents. In other words, the UN needs to be updated. It needs to be brought into the future. It needs to be given more power. It needs to be given a blank check. And so a lot of this is happening in the context of allegedly solving global issues like poverty and hunger, which incidentally the UN and the policy it's pursuing would tend to worsen. Like, for example, their war on farmers, and yet they're now pretending like the problems that they are either creating or worsening can only be solved by giving them more power, more money, more authority. One of the things that really jumped out at me, Andrew, was right in the pact for the future, these so-called four freedoms. They've got two of them listed there, freedom from fear and freedom from want. And of course, those were a big deal many generations ago with FDR, Norman Rockwell, the four freedoms.
Gary Codd, does this take a giant leap forward in the rush to global government, what we're just talking about here?
It does. It brings everything full circle. When the UN first came into being, the ultimate goal was to reach the status of a legitimate world government. So not just a mild infrastructure without power, but a full-blown, powerful, enforceable world government. And with this pact for the future, they're going to argue that they are there. So nations that don't go along with it will be punished. But probably right now, listeners are thinking, is there anything we can do about this at this point, since the Biden administration has weighed in on it and they're in favor of all this? So I would like to mention the names of a few congressmen who are taking a stand on this right now. On September 17th, there was a press briefing condemning this UN power grab just a few days before this Summit of the Future took place. Present at that briefing were U.S. Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina, Andy Biggs of Arizona, Ronnie Jackson of Texas, Eli Crane of Arizona, and Bob Good of Virginia. So they have been leading the way and trying to call the attention of their fellow congressional figures to the danger of this upcoming event. And right now in Congress, there are bills that have been introduced to end U.S. involvement in the UN in both houses. It includes House Bill 6645 and Senate Bill 3428, both of which are labeled the Defund Act. So I would encourage people to write their congressmen and their senators, urge them to support those bills to defund the UN. 26 Republican governors had, back in May, pledged publicly to resist UN dictates in their states. And this is when the WHO was getting ready to advance their plans through the World Health Assembly in Geneva. So we know that at least 26 Republican governors are opposed to the UN power grab. That gives us something to build upon. I would urge people to support any local county sheriffs that are pro-constitution that will pledge to stand in the way of any of this, because if they do not enforce this UN power grab, it won't go anywhere in our country. So it's very important that you vote on November 5th for people who support our constitution and are opposed to any type of power grab by the UN trying to force their dictates upon us. And I would also add to that, it is not unbiblical for us to pray that God would greatly confuse our enemies and render them inept and ineffective in their plans and actions.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Jan Markell, I have on the line from Indiana, Gary Ka. You can learn more at GaryKa.org. You can find the books that he's authored. He's been a guest on this program a dozen times or more here over the years because he's been monitoring the rush to the one world system going back even to the late 1980s, I believe. Gary, I'm going to just cite your newsletter here. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs because you wrote about Kamala Harris and it's fascinating. You say this, even before the election of 2020, not 2024, folks, he's writing, even before the election of 2020, Gary says, I had become aware that Harris was the real choice for president by top globalists, as unlikely as that may seem to some conservatives. However, they could not get around Joe Biden, who felt entitled to the presidency and had enough old school Democrats on his side to pull it off. So the global elite worked through Harris and other operatives they placed within the White House to push their extreme agenda, only dumping Biden once he was no longer useful to them and had become a liability. Gary Ka goes on, again, this is an article in his magazine that he writes. He says, in a fall 2020 election issue, I wrote the following paragraphs as a warning to our readers. It is clear that Joe Biden has become a mere figurehead for the far-left socialists who now commandeer the Democrat Party. Their real champion is Kamala Harris, a hardcore liberal socialist who is entirely dedicated to the climate change, pro-UN, one world agenda. And if they win, Harris and her behind-the-scenes accomplices will be in charge. Things in the U.S. would drastically change. There would be no turning back this time as the number of ultra-liberals in the U.S. is growing, thanks to the combined efforts of the leftist university professors, social and conventional media, Hollywood, high-tech moguls, and millennial followers of BLM, etc., the majority of whom are dedicated socialists. And then Gary concludes, keep your eyes on California Senator Harris. She is a rising star within the Democrat Party and is rapidly gaining popularity among millennials. She is attractive, intelligent, well-spoken, extremely liberal. Some political insiders believe she has her eyes on the White House. In order to become her party's nominee, she would have to overcome some of the older establishment liberals. And Gary, you wrote that, I believe, in 2020. Am I right?
Yeah, that last paragraph that you read, I wrote in 2018.
Okay.
And that was in my quote from the 2020 issue. So we've been watching her for a long time. She's a hardcore Marxist. Her father was a Marxist professor. So I believe the powers that be behind the scenes have known for a long time that she would be very loyal to their cause. They wanted to be able to get her in, especially as the first woman of color, which would give them an edge in promoting her. So now we see this race between her and Donald Trump is neck and neck. You notice she didn't have to go through any primary or major press conferences or anything like that. They're just running really flashy commercials that make her look very good. The one comment I made years ago was her being well-spoken. That one is questionable. She's not very good at answering on-the-spot questions and, of course, is notorious for her word salads. But she's very committed to their agenda. They're going to push her right to the end, and we'll see where it goes.
I'm going to continue on with this subject and add a few more as we conclude the hour up ahead here. But let me quickly say we've got an Understanding the Times night this Thursday, October the 10th. And remember, Pastor Mark Henry is the speaker that night, How to Prepare for the Coming Economic Tsunami. He's going to be talking about, because 2024 election is right around the corner, the economy is a primary issue. How do we cope with an economy that's tanking more every day? And how might you prepare for what's coming? You can live stream that this coming Thursday, October the 10th, and that would be 7 p.m. Central Time, 7 Central. MarkHenryMinistries.com. Please come on out if you're in the Upper Midwest, Revive Church, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. No cost. We'll offer a DVD post-program. We'll offer the presentation on Rumble, on our website, no cost, probably on YouTube as well. If you got any questions, give us a call. That's going to be Thursday, October the 10th, 7 p.m. Central. Pastor Mark Henry and yours truly will be the two co-hosts. Mark will be speaking on the coming economic tsunami and how to prepare for it. And my goodness, things are changing so rapidly, as my guests here, Gary Kaa, and I are talking about. Gary, what I want to do is take my midpoint break, but when I get back, I want to press you a little bit further on Kamala Harris and what on earth the globalists plan on doing, particularly if she gets elected here in November and installed in January. What kind of an America are we possibly looking at? And as you have said, she is a pretty much hardcore Marxist, and that's kind of shocking to say things like that. I mean, it's one thing to be a globalist. It's another thing to be a blatant Marxist. I'm back in just a minute or two. Don't go away.
We hope you'll stay in touch with us online through olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Write us through the mail at Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. In this age of fake news and false teaching, thank you for trusting Olive Tree Ministries and Understanding the Times Radio. Thank you for your prayerful and financial support of Understanding the Times Radio. Now in its 23rd year, we are heard from coast to coast on 1,000 radio stations and around the world electronically. We will always be committed to helping you understand the times, contend for the faith, and be watchmen on the wall. America is at a tipping point. This fall election is crucial. But it won't solve our nation's sin problem, because at the heart of America's decline is a spiritual problem. We must restore a reverence for God in our land. As this year begins to wind down, remember the words in Proverbs 9, verse 10, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Our prayer is that the nation and the church seek spiritual wisdom from God as we watch the storm warnings he is sending us each day.
There are so many crises that they can further inflame and grow them into something worse very quickly. And some of this depends on how globalists see the upcoming U.S. election. If they think that Trump is going to get in either right before the election or afterwards, I think we can expect some major crises hitting us. That's my biggest concern right now, because if that happens, all of this could go very quickly. What normally would take years to happen could take place in a matter of days or weeks.
We know you can't always be by a radio, so if you miss a program, visit our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org, and then go to radio, where we feature both the audio and video version of our program. You can also catch the program at oneplace.com, on our Rumble or YouTube channel, on all of our social media, and on his channel, Christian TV. Now, here are Jan Markell and Gary Kaa to wrap up today's programming.
One of your recent articles is called Reaching a Tipping Point, and I wanted to talk with you about that today. That's what I quoted to open up the podcast today, when you said, "At this point, nothing should surprise us." And I want you to comment further. From here, in the section under U.S. political upheaval, you say progressive socialists, communists, have a globalist agenda, and they are intentionally flexing their muscles to demonstrate their power, and that there is no going back. Now, in addition to that, that's what you wrote. We've all noticed it's amazing that they're saying the quiet part out loud. They don't care who knows how committed they are to their agenda, and it seems like they are a little cocky, proud, arrogant, prideful, but they're making progress for their agenda. Go ahead and share more.
I think they're at a point now where they're sending signals. They're flexing their muscles. For example, the trials with former President Trump. I mean, it's ridiculous what all they've charged this man with. Really, they're coming after him and his family. And the message they're sending is, if a former U.S. president and billionaire cannot win against us. What makes you think that you feeble deplorables can defeat us? And that's really where we're at. They're making an example now out of certain leaders, especially Trump, because, you know, if they can do this to him, why fight anymore? Why take a stand? Why do anything? Because it's all over. That's what they want us to think. On the other hand, I've been encouraging Christians to pray for massive confusion in the camp. In fact, I wrote that in my article, Tipping Point, which came out a few weeks ago, Reaching a Tipping Point. And have you noticed the last 2 weeks, the confusion right now among Democratic progressives in the party and trying to figure out what to do with Joe Biden? So I encourage every listener to keep praying that way. It is not wrong to pray that way. I am asking God to produce so much confusion in the enemy's camp because these are enemies. They want to take our country down a socialist communist path and surrender our freedoms and our constitution to a globalist agenda. And it's very dangerous. My parents, as you know, David, they fled from this type of thing during World War II. My dad fled from the communists first and then the Nazis, came to this country because of the incredible freedoms here, and now we're losing them very quickly. So we need to pray fervently for confusion in the enemy camp. We need to take a stand, not yes. in an alarmist kind of way where things are over-exaggerated, but just speaking the truth and pointing out the truth to people and providing the evidence and documentation to back that up. And that's what we try to do. I believe that's what the Lord has called us to do in our ministry, Hope for the World.
Welcome back. Talking to Gary Kaa for the hour. Learn more at GaryKaa.org. I can refer to a posting on his website he made very recently, and that was his being interviewed by David Fiorazzo. Gary Kaa, let me first ask you this, and then I'll go to the other issue here in just a second. But you said to me, if Kamala Harris wins the presidency, the globalist takeover is complete. You need to tell me what that means and what that means to my listeners.
At the federal level, in the executive office of the president, there will be a person in office who will support from A to Z everything that the globalists want to do. She will stand behind the UN. Whatever they want to bring about, she will back. By the way, one of the UN's biggest goals through this Pact of the Future is to control every person on the planet through a biometric digital
yes.
ID.
Yes.
And if you oppose or speak out against the UN's endeavors, some of their options will be that your bank account can be frozen, your travel restricted, your freedom of speech, of course, limited. A lot of this they want to pull off through artificial intelligence. To have a president of the United States who would support all of these actions by the UN, how do you fight back on something like that? It could only be at the state level on a state-by-state basis. Perhaps state banks controlled by state laws could resist this, but I think most of the federal banking structure would be in the camp and would go along with it. So it really limits our options. And that's why the governors are very important right now, living in a state where you have a governor who's not afraid to take a stand against the UN. And if you have a county sheriff who likewise is on that same page, I think it's going to come down really in the United States, at least, to a battle between some of the states and the federal government if Kamala gets in. If Trump gets in, then the globalists have a problem on their hands. And that's why they've been doing everything they can, throwing everything at this man to keep him out, because he's been a thorn in their side, and they do not want him to get in. It'll be interesting, Jan, to see if the election plays out, if nothing extreme happens yeah. between now and then. If it's a close race, they may see which way it goes. And if Trump does happen to get in, they still have 2 months after the election to try to pull something off, so we wouldn't be out of the woods. The next few months between now and the end of January are especially critical for the United States of America mm-hmm. and for our national sovereignty.
I have a headline in front of me. I believe it's on Gateway Pundit. BlackRock, the puppet master behind Kamala Harris. BlackRock's a big globalist outfit. Do you think they're kind of running the world?
They're very heavily tied in with the World Economic Forum. They're just one of many economic powers. You could argue that they are as powerful as any of the others, maybe the most powerful, but there's a whole conglomeration of these types of organizations and major foundations. You've got the Soros Foundations, the Rockefeller yeah. Foundations, organizations like the Clinton Global Initiative that's been supporting it. And then in my briefing on the Summit of the Future that we posted on our website just days before the summit took place, We named just a few of the organizations that might surprise people as having been involved in all of this.
Yep, please name them.
The first one I named was the Vatican. A little-known event took place on March 4th and 5th. At that time, the Vatican's Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences actually hosted a workshop on the Summit of the Future with participation from the Muslim Council of Elders, along with regional and global banking reps from the Inter-American Development Bank and the World Bank, also former and current UN officials, governmental ministers, and academic experts. Pope Francis has lent his support to all of this. He backs it. Secondly, the Climate Governance Commission, known as the CGC. This is a working group attached to a larger body known as the Global Governance Forum. They had a lot of input into the Summit of the Future and this pact. Back in 2023, the CGC issued a report titled Governing Our Planetary Emergency, paid in part by the Rockefeller Foundation, which examined the climate change agenda in light of future governance. The report specifically highlighted the Summit of the Future along with other UN events as a milestone to, quote, move the planet through a swift and just global transition, end quote. So again, that wording is telling. They're saying they want to do whatever they're going to do through the UN very quick and effectively. A few of the suggestions from that report of the CGC included establishing a global environmental agency to serve as the central node for climate and for general global environmental earth system governance, end quote. Also, they talk about the need for a more powerful international court regarding environmental issues, reform the global financial architecture, they say, and I quote, to ensure that the financial system pursues climate, planetary boundary, and development goals in parallel, end quote. So such a restructuring would compel private companies to partner with governments and align their productivity and profits with planetary goals as set by the international community. So whatever the UN says about the environment, you have to bring your company in line with that or else you'll be penalized. Also, Jan, they talk about the creation of a UN parliament. This is big, and a lot of people are not aware of this, even people who've read the pact. They don't realize how big the push is behind the scenes for a UN parliament, where it actually becomes a government, just like the European Union, except on a global scale. And then they also bring up funding for the UN and how important it is to fund it through international taxes. The third organization I'm just going to touch on briefly here is the Foundation for European Progressive Studies. They also influenced this pact in a major way, calling for new powers for the UN General Assembly. They don't want to have to wait to pass resolutions on conflicts, having to wait for Security Council approval. They want to be able to bypass the UN Security Council if necessary. They want to upgrade the UN Economic and Security Council to make it an executive council. They get into details, specifics on how they want to restructure the UN to make it more powerful. So these are just a few of the organizations, and there are tons of foundations, literally dozens of them, backing this up, and then the whole World Economic Forum and yes. Bill Gates and all the people that were mentioned at the outset of yep. the program.
Gary, what about outfits like MasterCard, Visa, you name Merck Company, Johnson & Johnson? You've already referenced Rockefeller Foundation. We could go on and on and on naming these organizations because we sound conspiratorial, but it's not a conspiracy. It's a reality.
That's exactly right. A few years ago, the Vatican launched a special group, Guardians of Inclusive Capitalism. They are to be the overseers of some of these major economic changes that are being pushed by the World Economic Forum. You have your major credit card companies involved there, some of the major banks, pharmaceutical yep. companies. We covered that in one of our issues a few years ago and named all those names, and it's all fully documented.
Yeah, let me just promote your magazine, Gary, because if you'd like to learn more, you can get his quarterly newsletter. It's excellent. It's in print, and it's also online. Go to GaryKaw.org, GaryKaw.org. You are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have Gary on the line from Indiana. Just a little bit of a different question that I didn't prepare you for, but do you think that the globalist cabal then was behind the couple of assassination attempts on Donald Trump?
I'll say this. Those who are supposed to be protecting Donald Trump have left so many margins open around the perimeters, almost as if, here, come and get him. There are so many coincidences now that we're supposed to believe are simply coincidences. It's becoming more and more difficult to believe that some of this wasn't planned out. But having said that, I think the immediate people around former President Trump are really good people willing to put their lives on the line. They've been quick to respond, and I think he feels secure about them. It's further out around the perimeter and down at his golf course. The guy was there for 12 hours, and you're telling me that the Secret Service under Homeland Security, that they're not competent enough to cover all those bases? At some point, you have to say, at the very least, it looks as if they're deliberately leaving avenues open so that people can get to President Trump. And something else, Jan, I just saw a survey, and I wanted to write it down. It came and went quickly. I saw it on one of the news organizations, actually on television, a survey of members of the Democratic Party. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and loosely quote it. It was something like 20% of Democrats wanted to see President Trump assassinated, and roughly another 20% thought it would be great if it happened. They weren't necessarily cheering it on, but hey, that'd be great if it happened. You've got 40% of the Democrat Party that are cheering this on. Of course, the liberal media, they know that, and so they're not toning things down. They're still saying he's a threat to democracy and everything else, but yet you have the Biden-Harris team out there endorsing the UN and a global power grab to take away our national sovereignty and force us into a world government system, and they're not a threat to democracy or to our constitutional republic. What hypocrisy.
Well put. I'm going to have Michelle Bachmann weigh in here in a brief clip. She's on Steve Bannon's war room. I think Steve Bannon's in jail right now, but it's got a sub sitting in for him.
These countries are all run by the billionaire class, right? It's not just that the countries decide to do this stuff. So who's pulling the strings and who wants to ultimately run the world?
Well, it's the richest people in the world, the richest corporations in the world. And you have to look no further than the World Economic Forum. That's the crowd that meets in Davos about every 6 months. They all fly in their private jets and decide how we're going to become slaves to them. That's essentially what they do. And they're completely on board with it. They have no conscience about it. And so they hate, quote, democracy. You want to talk about who the danger to democracy is.
Right.
It's these oligarchs who want to ensure that really the world becomes smaller so that they can control it, control us, control our money. That's what digital ID is about, to control us, our movements, and our money. And that's part of what the UN said they were going to do. They were announcing that through the WHO. That's what happened through the international health rules that were passed in May of this year. They didn't get the Global Pandemic Treaty through. Didn't matter. They got the rules through at the end of May. And that demanded that there would be global digital ID for every person on Earth. Hey, I just got it on my Delta app. Do I want to sign up for the global digital ID? I saw it in LaGuardia. There's a special lane that they have to go in through security where you're going through the digital ID. So, I mean, this is very well traveled. And also, I just read an article 2 days ago, beginning in April of 2025, to get into the UK, you have to have permission now from them. And you have to pay fees. So this is that beginning now of actually enacting the global digital ID, which is a part of the one world government. So I think if Trump gets in, he's going to stop this thing and shut it down.
And Michelle will be with me on air here in a couple of weeks. Gary Kao, digital ID. Give me your 2 cents on this digital ID, when it's coming and how it plays into the one world agenda.
My personal opinion is that to introduce it and force it upon the people where that's the only way of buying and selling, where cash no longer exists, would take some type of international financial crisis. They need an excuse, a reason that the public will buy into for why we have to have a whole new global system that's going to be completely digital. You look at the stock market, it's so overvalued. I think it's set up for a collapse. If we have an international crisis, whether it's a major terrorist attack or a lunge forward toward World War III, which we could see how that could happen with what's going on between Ukraine and Russia and Israel and Hezbollah right now, there are so many crises that they can further inflame and grow them into something worse very quickly. And some of this depends on how globalists see the upcoming U.S. election. If they think that Trump is going to get in either right before the election or afterwards, I think we can expect some major crises hitting us. That's my biggest concern right now, because if that happens, all of this could go very quickly. What normally would take years to happen could take place in a matter of days or weeks. So that's what we as Christian believers need to be praying into and asking God to intervene. I don't know if God will intervene in the case of our nation if we are, A, not doing anything ourselves to get this message out and to take a stand, and B, if we as a nation don't repent.
Yeah.
Because we have become so immoral now. The fact that you almost have to be quiet on abortion because it's difficult for a conservative candidate to get elected if he even mentions abortion, because a majority of the people in this country now favor abortion. Just one example. We are in such a bad place as a nation now that it's a minority of us that are sounding the alarm, and it's going to be an uphill battle the rest of the way. And if the UN has their way, all this could happen very quickly.
Let me just go down another path here, because you've referenced Pope Francis a couple of times. My goodness, I'm not sure how long his term's going to be. He's hanging on really well, health-wise and all, but he's big on this whole climate agenda, saving the planet. And we had some people more interested in saving the planet, I think, than saving souls, but I'm not going to go down that path right now. But the name you have raised, and I have too, and that's this very intriguing Archbishop Carlo Vigano. He's trying to warn of a lot of things to come, and sometimes on alternate days even sounds like an evangelical. He is not. He's very Catholic, but he's very outspoken. He's very anti-Pope Francis. He's trying to get some truth out there. How does he play into this, and how does the whole Vatican play into this?
Vigano has done a lot to alert conservative Catholics to what's going on.
Yes.
So there is an awakening within the Catholic community that this current pope is part of this globalist agenda, and they shouldn't be supporting him. That's a place where the mass media doesn't want to go. And for the most part, they have propped up Pope Francis and made him look very good. That's because he lines up with the proposals of the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Economic Forum, and all these globalists. So I think part of the globalist agenda and why they're trying to push it so quickly right now is they would like to get this power grab completely done while Francis is in place and while the Biden-Harris administration is in place. If Harris gets elected, it would give them a little bit more time, but Harris is going to rubber stamp whatever they want. So it's pretty much a done deal. If Trump gets in, if he's actually able to come back into the White House, I think he would try to overturn much of what they're doing, and that's what they want to avoid. Yeah. So they have a real sense of urgency right now to get this done as quickly as possible.
Let me ask you this. Does a non-establishment politician even stand a chance these days as voters? And we're encouraging everyone to go vote, and some people say, well, it doesn't make any difference. And that's because people are wondering, is everything set up in advance?
Like I said, you've got some state governors that are taking a very strong stance. You've got Kristi Noem, Sarah Sanders Huckabee in Arkansas, DeSantis in Florida, and you've got others and lieutenant governors. Right now, we're in a race in Indiana where our current governor, who's running again, he's a bit of a rhino. He's not been as conservative as we'd like on everything, but guess what? Lieutenant governor was able to get on the ticket with him, and he's a very solid, strong Christian who we have been supporting. So at the very least, we will have a strong lieutenant governor in there, and I think they are going to get elected. So all across the country, there are some heated battles going on that are leaning conservative Republican right now, but it's mostly at the state level. At the federal level, it's going to be more difficult, especially if abortion becomes a big issue, because if you remember in the midterms, the abortion issue drew out the far left in huge numbers, while about a half of evangelicals stayed at home and didn't vote. And that's the problem. If 90% of evangelicals got out and voted the way they could, we could maybe regain control of the Senate and pick up 15 or 20 seats in the House. That would make all the difference in the world, because our state governors alone can't fight this battle. They need help at the federal level, and hopefully we will have a major effort moving forward in January and February to bring the United States, at the very least, to defund the United Nations, and if possible, take the U.S. completely out of the U.N.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Jan Markell, have on the line from Indiana, Gary Kaa. Learn a lot more at GaryKaa.org, GaryKaa.org. Look into the books that he's written at that website. And again, I've referenced the magazine that's quarterly, and that tips you off on all these issues that we're talking about, folks. I wouldn't want to be without it. And I got an interesting email in front of me, Gary. Just read a couple of lines to it. They say, January of 2025, Klaus Schwab will step down as executive chairman, and a gentleman by the name of Bjorge Brende will take over. It may be interesting to dig in and see what the new leader has planned for the organization and for the world. And what do you think? Do you think there'll be any change in the strategy of the World Economic Forum going forth in 2025?
I don't believe so. Yeah. I think it's going to keep going down the same path. You have all the same players involved. It's just Klaus Schwab is getting older. Back in 2022, Jan, in March, I did a program with Curtis Bowers, the Christian documentary producer, and he got in touch with me a day or two afterwards and said right after the program he got a call from an individual who said it's urgent that he talks with me. So Curtis was getting permission to put me in touch with him. We talked at some length for about an hour, this particular individual, and I'm not going to name names, but he has been mentored by someone who is very high up in the World Economic Forum. He's not in favor of their agenda, but played along with it once he realized what it was all about. And he told me just a couple of weeks before our conversation, he had lunch with this individual, and he thought he'd pose a cleverly worded question, and it went something like this. Hey, as quickly as things are moving forward, do you believe that the Great Reset could take a big jump ahead yet this year, meaning 2022? And he barely had the words out of his mouth, and his friend answered 2024, 2024, very emphatically. So they have been targeting this year, 2024, for at least 2.5 years that I've known about it. And this summit of the future at the UN, the World Health Assembly meeting back in late May, early June, this has been on the agenda for a long time. And now all they need is a few major crises to try to make their power grab complete. So I think that's the next thing we could expect unless God intervenes. And that's why I do want to mention quickly here, go to 40daysusa.com. They have launched a 40-day prayer vigil that began in late September leading up to the November 5th election. I was asked to be one of the Christian leaders to pray on one of those days. It's going to be aired on October 19th or 20th on various radio networks around the country like K-Love and Moody Radio. And this is 40 days where each day a Christian leader will be leading the nation in prayer regarding all of these developments, that God would intervene on behalf of America if we repent and follow him. Mm-hmm. So people can go to 40daysusa.com, and they can follow along with that. Each day will be a new posting, so you can either hear it on the radio or there. But please, please pray fervently, more fervently than you ever have before, and then support congressmen and women who will oppose this diabolical agenda, and also your local elected officials and governors. And don't just sit on your hands and do nothing. This is a time for action for all Christians.
Very well put, Gary. And folks, again, let me just throw in quickly that we've got Understanding the Times that's coming Thursday night, October the 10th, at Revive Church, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, 7 p.m. Central Time live stream, MarkHenryMinistries.com, MarkHenryMinistries.com. It'll be posted post-program. We're going to talk about the coming economic tsunami that's up ahead for late 2024 and 25 and going forward. What does the Bible teach about economic issues in the last days, and how might we prepare for what might be coming? Again, you can live stream it or be with us in person at 7849 West Broadway in Brooklyn Park. Plenty of seating at the church. We're reaching out to dozens of countries with the live stream efforts. Do hope you'll tune in one way or another. And Gary, I am woefully out of time. I've got a minute left. If you'd like to summarize, it's all yours.
Well, I would just say, given the international disarray on so many fronts, the chances of a major global crisis occurring soon are high and growing. That's reality.
Yes.
We can't deny that. But even more real is the fact that we are immensely loved by a Savior who came to die in our place so that we can have eternal life and not perish. Jesus truly is the only hope for this fallen world, and he's the only hope for each of us. And we have to place our trust in him. One great passage of Scripture is from 2 Corinthians 4:17-18. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So I thank the Lord for the confidence we have in Jesus and that our eternity is secure no matter what happens on this planet.
Amen. Thank you so much, Gary Kaw. Learn more at GaryKaw.org. Sign up for his magazine. Folks, I want to say I'm almost out of breath, and that's only because the subject matter of the hour has been very intense and certainly called you to action a couple of times. and that would certainly be voting. And again, we can, as Gary said, pray for mass confusion on the part of those that want to take our country down and install this wicked, I would say satanic, global government idea that we read about in the Bible. It's there, Revelation 13, other places. It's very clear that a one-world system is coming. It's on the way. It's being formed as we speak. And, you know, believers in Jesus Christ have a one-world kingdom to look forward to. It's called the millennium. It's a literal 1,000 years of peace on earth with Jesus Christ ruling and reigning from Jerusalem. It will be a little bit of heaven on earth before the eternal state. And while the unbelieving world will just have spent 7 years under a tyrant, believers will enjoy a millennium of peace and prosperity with Jesus on the throne. Even the animal kingdom will be at peace with a lion and a lamb resting side by side in perfect harmony. I can't wait, and I do want to thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. We can be salt and light in today's dark world, and we can delay the decay. We are here on assignment, and we may be running out of time as we watch global events that seem to allow all things to fall into place.